All right, folks, welcome back. Welcome back. Socially Connected 360, episode 30. We're in season 3. We're excited about this episode. We have none other than Roy Schuler, an actor, a print model, a voiceover artist, inspirational speaker. I mean, you name it. He's from Harlem. We're going to get to know him starting now.
Better than anybody ever knew.
I'm gonna show you.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Welcome back. Socially Connected 360, number 30. Like I said in the pre-show, listen, I'm excited about this show. I have my good friend, someone I met many years ago, seen his work. Mr. Roy Schuler is in the house. Excited to have him. He's an actor. I mean, you name it. This is a motivational speaker, voiceover artist. I mean, the list goes on. So we're happy to have Roy on the show. Roy, how's everything? How's Harlem, man?
Harlem is hot, man. Harlem is on fire. Harlem is good. Harlem is home, man. Thanks for the invitation and for that very kind introduction, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So Harlem, We hear about the Harlem Globetrotters. We hear about music, jazz, all that stuff. Tell us a little bit about Harlem, man. Just real quick, before we start, get into your life, acting, all that stuff. Tell us a little bit about Harlem, man. It's so intriguing.
Well, as a native Harlemite, it is still very much those things that you describe. It's clearly well known that there's been a lot of gentrification that's taken place in Harlem, particularly over the past or during the past 30 plus years. But as a person who was born and raised here, it's good to see that there are still many things that are intact, that are indelible to what Harlem is about. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's some things that have come to the community that somewhat contrast with that, but it's good to see that there is a population that is hell-bent on making sure that a lot of the cultural aspects of Harlem remain intact, the gentrification notwithstanding. So it's just the Black Mecca, man. It really is still the Black Mecca.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. So tell us about that. So life growing up in Harlem. So tell us, when you were a kid, I know you're an actor now. You've done good work. You actually have a little bit of ties. So I met you in the Lehigh Valley, and we'll get into that. But tell us a little bit about growing up in Harlem. How was that as a kid?
Well, it was interesting. My brother and I talk about this often. I have an older sister as well. How we had good upbringings. Both parents in the household, they were blessed to send us to private schools for the most part. I grew up in the projects, man. Literally 5 minutes from where I live right now. So there's something electric, there's something very attractive about coming back to an environment where you came to be. Mm. When I walked by the school that I attended, Head Start, and kindergarten, where I learned to read, I'm still able to draw up that energy. So for the most part, man, we had a good childhood, some of the challenges notwithstanding of living in a very urban area. But we were educated here, still have many friends here. We have fond memories of basketball tournaments and going to the library and the museum and things like that. And I still have, again, lots of friends from grade school and high school that still live in Harlem. And it's not uncommon to run into somebody on Harlem's main thoroughfare, which is 125th Street, who I know of or grew up with. So we had a good upbringing, man. It was memorable.
So I think of Harlem Globetrotters. I'm into basketball. I played basketball in high school, and I love basketball. And so did you go watch them when they were kids? How did that, was that big over there?
Wait, brother, hold on, brother. How old you think I am, man? Come on, man. Don't let the grays fool you, man.
The Harlem Globetrotters are coming to Allentown here in a minute.
Well, I don't remember, quite honestly, when I was a kid. I mean, I certainly knew who Curly Neal and Meadowlark Lemon were. And they were the Harlem Globetrotters, but I don't remember them performing a lot in Harlem. I would see them on TV when I was a kid on Channel 7, Wide World of Sports, stuff like that. But I don't recall ever seeing them in Harlem. But I did. I was certainly aware of who they were as kids, but I saw them on TV as opposed to up close. Yeah.
I just saw they're coming to Allentown again. That's why I brought it up.
Okay. So I saw something. I was my son and I, Jordan, who's going to be 21 tomorrow. We were blessed to take in a game at the Barclays Center last night to see the Nets win their 12th straight victory against the Spurs.
Oh man, the Nets are on fire right now.
It was nice. It was nice. And I believe we saw that the Harlem Globetrotters are going to be there sometime, I guess, within the next couple of months.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to him, man. Happy birthday to him. And that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, Brooklyn Nets, man. They're what they're supposed to be right now. So hopefully they can keep that together, man.
Yeah, they played very well last night. I mean, they blew the Spurs out. And by the fourth quarter, I think the coach had sat out the starters. So it was an early garbage time.
Wow, nice, nice, nice. Yeah. So let's get right into it, man. Acting, I know we talked obviously in the past about it, but you mentioned your kids. How did you get into acting and how do they feel about it? You know, how did you get into acting and things like that?
Well, I got into acting, really, it was a process that was born out of pain, brother. Mm-hmm. I've worked in corporate for many years and there was a company who came at me foul. Do you hear me?
Yeah.
There was a company who came at me foul back in the summer of 2001. And it really forced me, much, and I told this story to others before, it forced me like an episode of The Honeymooners to sit down. There was a very well-known episode of The Honeymooners that they called Man with a Horn. And very quickly, this gentleman had come to Ralph's apartment. And he was this very successful business person. And Ralph was like, wait a minute, how did you go from living in this dump where Alice and I live to becoming this very successful business person? And the gentleman said to Ralph, you know, I took stock of myself. Mm. I sat down, listed my good points, my bad points. So when this thing happened to me, June 22nd, 2001, you know, brother still remembers it, right? Because and there's a reason for that we'll probably touch on later. It serves as fuel today.
Absolutely.
And in the aftermath of that experience, I sat down, Lewis, and I took stock of who I thought I was at my essence. And I looked at ways, how can I hire myself? Because I don't want to keep going through these kind of experiences where companies think, and I respect corporations, but my experience is personal, where companies think that they can basically dictate your future and just hold you in the balance. Mm-hmm. So I looked at some things that I thought God had gifted me to do, and if I were to pursue them, it wouldn't feel like work. Public speaking was one of those things. I've always been passionate about public speaking. I've always enjoyed the power of words. Mm. So, and I was always interested in voice acting. I was told that I had a nice voice, kindly, humbly, as a kid. As a kid, right? So I was living in Rockland County, north. I had left Harlem by this point. I was living in Rockland County about 35, 40 minutes north of the city. And I called up a talent agent and I explained what I wanted to do. And they said, well, look, if you want to get into voiceovers, you should take acting lessons. Why don't you come and audit our class? Man, I went to audit their class and they gave me some copy or sides and charged me in front of a class with the responsibility of acting this out. I was hooked.
Yeah.
I'd gotten literally bitten by this bug. I got to figure out a way to do this. Yeah. Fast forward, and I'm almost done with this story. Oh, fast forward, 4 years later, went through a very, very, very challenging divorce. Mm. Very challenging divorce. And I was just turning 40. And I said, you know what? I want to pursue this. So I modeling was an interest of mine as well. So I hooked up with an agent out in Reading, Pennsylvania. He's since passed away. Randy Donatelli modeling and casting. Ah. And he thought he could get some work for me. He said to me, never give up. He said, things change on a dime in this business. This was 2005. Got a job with Dun & Bradstreet. 2 years later, September 19, 2007, Randy calls me on my cell phone. I'm at work. I think I have a spot for the commercial. What are you doing on Friday? Nothing.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
So, I got cast in a background role in a commercial for a coordinated health. And I remember I was singing with my church choir as a member of Greatest Shiloh Church in Easton at the time. Pastor Phil, what's up, y'all? And I remember sending it to the choir, the file of what I got. I said, don't blink. because you'll miss me. But as I close on the story, Lewis, that small thing, that was the seed that God watered that gave birth to everything else that followed.
Amazing.
So in a nutshell, it was a love for, it was a process born out of pain that revealed my my desire to speak, to have a message. And I was always a bit of a storyteller.
Yeah.
And I had this love for power of words. That's how it came to be, man.
Yeah, that's what we need in this podcast. We need you to just keep telling the stories, man. Don't worry about it. This is a podcast. Yeah, we can talk as much as we want here. Man, I'll tell you what, powerful, because there's a young person or even an older person, mind you, an elder or even someone who needed to hear that. You know, we all are going through difficult times. I mean, you mentioned a divorce. Some people have some health issues. Some people lose jobs. And you want to give up, and you know, you have that moment, you know, you have that moment watching that one episode, and it just clicked, like, you know. And so you pursued it, you moved on it, and I talk about that a lot, you know, in my little videos that I do, little shorts, little motivational stuff. I also do it to remind myself a lot of the stuff that I put out. Well, I talk about that, you know. We talk about, you know, action, you know. Once you feel that, act on that, you know, act on it. You just never know. And again, like you said, and just like your, you know, your agent said, don't give up. I mean, things can change on a dime. So that's amazing. So acting, how do your kids feel, or what, maybe you saw their reaction when they saw you on TV on a commercial? I remember watching, like, you know, those old, like, shows back in the 90s, and you'll have those commercials come up. Well, how do your kids feel about that? And then obviously you've been in other things, and we're going to get into that, but how do they feel? Like, man, it's amazing.
Well, they're very supportive, man. I have three children. My oldest is my daughter, Adrian. I have a daughter, Sydney, who just graduated from Hampton University. Well, my older daughter's a lawyer. She's got 3 degrees, man.
Bang. Oh my God. Girl.
3 degrees. She just passed the bar last year.
Amazing. So
she's an attorney, as is her mother, and one of her brothers, and her other brother is a very successful realtor. My daughter, Sydney, just graduated from Hampton University. Man. She's a journalist down in Charlottesville. My son is a junior at East Carolina University. And my granddaughter, Nyla, is a smart as a whip, fifth grader. She'll be 11 in March. But all that to say, when they see me on TV, man, it's a real joy.
Yeah.
My younger children from my wife, my daughter Sydney and my son Jordan, they've been particularly close on this journey. Because I remember when I did my first play with Touchstone Theater, W.T. George, what's happening? Emma Ackerman. Hello, JP, what's up, guys? I remember when I did my first play, and they were with me every other weekend, right? So, man, it got to the point where that first play that I did with Touchstone was like a part-time job. I was going to rehearsal, man, like 20 hours a week. It was a big production that we did back in April of 2012. The name escapes me right now, may come back to me. But I say that to say, Sydney and Jordan were particularly close because they would come to rehearsals with me, man.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I had rehearsals. We got to a point, Lewis, where we had a run of the play. We did it Saturday and Sunday. We would meet from like 9 to 5. We would do a run of the play from 10 to 1, break for lunch 1 to 2, do it again 2 to 5. Yeah. And Sydney and Jordan would be right there at rehearsal with me. So, you know, they were up close and as far as theater stuff. But when they see commercials or they see the work I've done, I've been blessed to do on SNL or commercials, they're a part of the journey, man. So it's my younger adult, my granddaughter. I remember telling her I'd done something on a game show called The Big Fib, and it was on Disney. So I told her mom about it, and I told my granddaughter about it. It was basically a show where a child was trying to pick who was telling the truth. They had a real expert person playing like they were an expert. I was a person playing like I was a rock expert. So when my granddaughter Nyla saw it, she called me, "Ooh, you were lying." that kind of deal. So they're a part of it. And I'm so blessed, as a wrap on this part, Lewis, I'm so blessed that I could do this at a point where they could see.
Mm-hmm.
They could be somewhat up close, especially Sydney and Jordan, because they were, you know, because I would see them more often. Mm-hmm. And they could see the commitment that it took. They could see the work. They could see the sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, humbly, there is something they can glean from my experience and incorporate into their own journeys, whether it's Sydney as a journalist, Jordan as a college student, my older daughter, you know, Adrian is more established and doing her thing, and my granddaughter. So mm-hmm. they're a part of the journey, man.
Yeah. And again, you know, the art of acting, you know, is something that I truly, truly appreciate. I mean, it is very difficult. You know, you might not know this about me, but I played a detective one time mm-hmm. in my brother's film. My brother Moses, he does some short films here in the Lehigh Valley. He works. Okay. He does some stuff. And so I played a detective in one of it. It's coming out soon. I'll get it to you. I'll send you the link.
Cool.
I think it's a feature film, but I played okay. it. And I can tell you, you know, I said this before when I interviewed someone else and we talked about acting, it was to me, until you're in the moment, right? You get the lines and they tell you, okay, rehearse your lines. You know, this is what the setup's going to be. You know, this right. is going to be the shoot. You know, we're going to be in the house. You're going to do this, that. I'm like, okay, I've never done this before. So I get right. there. I look over the lines, but yeah. when I get there, I yeah. see all the lights. I see all the cameras.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, this is yeah. the real deal.
Yeah, it's a little different.
It's something that you really have to appreciate. You got to prepare, and we're going to get into that. You're going to give that good advice. But I mean, I can tell you, after that shoot, every shoot after, you know, every scene after that we shot, I try to be as prepared as I could be, because you know that it's just a lot of people putting in a lot of work, whether it's Absolutely. The lighting, the sound guy, I mean, camera, the angles, repeating different angles. I mean, it's just so amazing. So amazing the work that you do. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that, man. I think it's important that, you know, I wanted to get that perspective, because I see my kids and the work that I do and how they appreciate it. And I know that, you know, our kids are watching, and even at an older age, they're still watching and right. still, you know, you can appreciate that. So, but let's take a little twist, because I want to, you know, obviously I met you in the Lehigh Valley. I know you're from Harlem. So, right. What brought you to the Lehigh Valley? I know you were here for a period of time. So how did that happen?
Yeah, I was married at the time, and I was working for a very well-known insurance company. I was living in Rockland County, but I was traveling to the White House station area right off of exit 24 of 78 every day. It was like 50-odd miles. And one day, I was at lunch with a couple of coworkers, and I saw a sign that said Easton, PA. It was either 32 or 34 miles. I was like, is that? Like Easton, like Larry Holmes Easton?
Larry Holmes, yeah.
They said, yeah. And I said, wait a minute. I'm living in New York State in Rockland County, but I'm actually driving to somewhere, and I'm actually closer to the Pennsylvania state line mm-hmm. than I am to New York. How long is this going to continue? Especially, and this was back in 2001, 2002, mm-hmm. when I found out how relatively cheap Lehigh Valley real estate was.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
compared
yeah.
to New York.
Oh my God.
So
night and day.
A buddy of mine brought in a newspaper. Maybe it might have been the Express Times from Lehigh Valley. And I showed my then wife. Long story short, we had an opportunity to make an intelligent investment. We had a townhouse that we had bought in Rockland County. So we had an opportunity, kids being young, to make an intelligent investment. And at the same time, in theory, improve our collective quality of life. So we ended up selling our townhome in Rockland County. We built a house in Forks Township in Easton. Mm. And that's how we got there. Now, I ended up getting divorced and I sold the house. But of course, I remained in the Lehigh Valley.
Yeah,
I was anchored there by my membership in a fantastic church. I mentioned Grady Shiloh. And it was in the Lehigh Valley that I became an actor.
Yeah, I know. I saw your work, obviously. I've seen a lot of your work. And I mean, you actually were the mayor of Allentown, I think, or mayor of something.
Yeah. Shout out to the Belkers and my photographer, Elaine. Hello, you guys. I'm so proud of the work that they're doing with the cafes. They're doing some fantastic stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was blessed to get cast as the mayor in Zeke's film, Billboard. And his wife has been my go-to headshot photographer since 2014. She does lovely work. She's just a fantastic person, you know.
Yeah. So Again, we have some stuff in common, man. It's amazing. So I actually play. I didn't make the cut, though. I didn't make the cut. This is the thing about acting, right? And you know this more than me, but sometimes you get casted for things and they just don't seen in the film, or that happens. That happens a lot.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I played an anchor. I played the anchor.
Oh, okay.
So we actually went to a real news station, and I actually auditioned for it.
Right.
Via it wasn't Zoom at the time. I sent the video in, and so
Okay.
they actually had me do it, and but I didn't make the cut. It just
Okay.
didn't, you know, these the films, and you know this better than I do, but a lot of times there's so much film, and then it becomes a lot more time, and now it's just
Yeah.
more than a feature. So, but that's
Absolutely.
wonderful. That's wonderful, man. And I, like I said, I love seeing you up there as the mayor. I was like, man, you should be the mayor for real. That's
Thanks.
great.
It was
So,
fun,
but I want to get back to just the acting part of it.
yeah.
Why acting? I know you told me the story. I know that you, is it something that once it hit you, that you were just like, this is it? Or is it something that just evolved into like every time you do it, you feel something? I mean, just like for me, for cycling, once I get on that bike,
Yeah.
I feel alive.
Yeah,
Is
absolutely. I know exactly what
you know, why acting for you?
well, a good question. I mean, and there's some similarities there, but there were a few benchmarks in my life that sort of drove me in that direction. I remember I was in the sixth grade and I had a fine teacher named Miss Holly, right? Miss Holly was fine, right? And I remember, Lewis, the assignment was in class to create a commercial, right?
Man.
And there used to be a wine out called Wild Irish Rose, right? And they had a little jingle, everybody knows, Wild Irish Rose. This was like back in the 70s, right? So
Great.
I remember sixth grade, I remember rewriting the lyrics, and it went from Wild Irish Rose to Roy's Irish Rose.
Oh, that's great.
You
That's
know,
better.
so I changed the lyrics a bit. Sang it, and then I had a buddy of mine. His name was Lorenzo Johnson. I still run into him every now and then because we have the same barber across the street from my apartment.
That's
And
great.
I had him serve as the celebrity endorser. Back then, my favorite basketball player was Walt Frazier. So at some point during the commercial, after I sang the jingle, Lorenzo came up and played Walt Frazier, celebrity endorser for Roy's Irish Rose. So that was a benchmark.
Great.
I was a very big, and still am a very big Michael J. Fox fan. I remember seeing him on the Tonight Show, and Johnny Carson was interviewing him, of course. And he said, "So, Michael," he said, "So, did you take acting lessons?" I think Michael grew up in Canada, and his response was, "Well, I was a regular BS artist." Bam! I said, "Hold on, this guy can take becoming a BS artist into becoming an actor. I got some BS I can put out there and work with too." But the one other thing, and then I'll move this forward. I was always From the time that I was a kid, I was always, man, very passionate about the power of words. And when Stevie Wonder released Songs in the Key of Life in 1976, I was 11 years old. And without any hyperbole whatsoever, it changed my life. Because that album, in addition to being his magnum opus, greatest work, it was one of the first albums I recall, Lewis, that had the lyrics to all the songs. So I would sit there, man, and I would study the lyrics to Sir Duke, I Wish, Pastime Paradise, Knocks Me Off My Feet, Black Man, I Am Singing, all those songs. And it taught me the power of words in telling stories as a frustrated singer, right? So all those things collectively bring me to a point where acting for me is, it's about storytelling. It's about having a message. It's about entertaining, it's about persuading, it's about performing. And you use words telling stories to do that. And much like with you on your bike, when I have an opportunity to do that, whether it's on a stage, in a commercial, on a TV set, when I have an opportunity to participate collectively in the telling of a story that's going to do something for somebody on the other side of that lens or out there in the audience. To me, that's just electric. It allows me to really speak to and operate at my essence. And there's nothing like that. And I wish that for everybody. It may not be acting, but find that thing or those things that speak to who and what you are, your essence, and It won't feel like work. There'll be effort required, but it won't feel like the drudgery of work. So that's the appeal for me, man.
Yeah. And again, it all comes down to, you know, getting to the point where you are at that point and then seeing that finished product of like, that's my work right there. You know, that's our work. Mm-hmm. You know, again, like I said before, all the work that the entire team of folks that are doing it together, not just the actor, but everybody behind it. And then boom, it's just a wonderful story. So amazing on that. Amazing. I love it. 42, I think you mentioned 40 something years old.
Yeah.
Is there anything difficult? I noticed, you know, there's a lot of older actors who become huge actors late in their life, because you have so much life. You have so much life to live. So let's be real. But somebody would consider it later on in your professional journey. Is that difficult? Is that something that you, or it just happened?
You know, difficult for me is relative, right? So there's some that might say it's difficult, but there's a quote from Stephen Covey, who wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the quotes that drives me, he said, it's easy to say no when there's a deeper yes burning in the inside, right? Mm-hmm. And I say that to say that at that point, my disdain, respectively, for corporate life was growing. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that as a long-term space in which I was going to operate at my essence and feel good about the work that I was doing, how I was treated, how I was rewarded, quote unquote. So the reason that I say hard is difficult is relative is because there was a deeper yes burning in the inside of me. So I started. When I did my first commercial, I was actually working for Dun & Bradstreet, right there in Center Valley, right? So there was this dual existence, if you will, of pursuing what I believe was true to my essence and then doing what it is I needed to do by day.
Oh yeah.
Until I could get to a point where I could leave that and dedicate more of my time. So I didn't see it as difficult as because it was something I was committed to. Mm. And it was something I was committed to doing in the long run. And because it spoke to my essence so deeply and so clearly, it was one of those things that I was not going to extinguish. It literally lit a flame in me. And I did not want to, I didn't want to extinguish it. So whatever it is I needed to do, I was going to do to continue to explore. So first it was commercials. And then I was blessed to jump into theater, like I said, with Touchstone, with the late, great George Miller, with Ara Barley, with Crowded Kitchen Players, Allentown Public Theater. It was just one of those things where if you're doing something that you believe is consistent with your calling and really speaks, again, I'm going to get back to this word essence. The difficulty is relative. And again, it's not that it doesn't require effort, right? But it doesn't feel like you're trying to put a square peg in a round peg in something that's square, it doesn't feel difficult to the point where there's discomfort or you feel like it's something you're not suited for. Just had to go, man, just go.
So I'm going to ask you this because I think a lot of people, you know, they deal with this, and I'm sure you might have dealt with it too.
Right.
The F word, you know, the fear of leaving the comforts of salary life and that money coming in consistently, almost like the fear of becoming an entrepreneur, you know.
Right.
How do you deal with that? That is like the biggest, in my opinion, I think for me. And I think many people probably feel the same way, that fear of like, wait a minute, I have this here. I don't want to do this. It's something I'm doing every day of my life. I'm wake up in the morning. Every day is the same, but now I want to pursue this passion.
Right.
So what do you say to that person?
Well, I didn't leave what I was doing for my sustenance while I pursued acting. As a matter of fact, I still have a day job now. And I'm glad you brought that up because the overwhelming majority of actors have some sort of day gig or have some sort of gig that they do outside of acting. For the economic sustenance, because the notion of just jumping into acting and having it satisfy all of your economic needs can be a bit disheartening. It can cause a bit of a frustration, so much so that you can blame the industry for not giving what you thought or what you think it should be giving to you. So again, while I started acting, I had a job with Dun & Bradstreet. I worked for our friend for a year, Reverend Dr. Gregory Edwards, you know, at the church at 144. Ninth Avenue, with Ninth Street, over on Turner. Resurrected Life. I worked there for a year. I worked for Olympus for a year. So I had a gig while I was still pursuing acting, and I still work as a substitute teacher for the New York City Department of Education here in New York.
Very nice.
As a substitute teacher, because it gives me the flexibility of taking time off when I need to, book a job, auditions, work when I want to. You know, and the per diem is decent as well. And I enjoy working with kids. Oprah Winfrey has a quote where she says, you know, do what you have to do until you can do what you want to do. So even though acting is going very well, especially over the past couple of years, you know, I still keep my day gig because that is an important part of my economic sustenance. So I'm going to get back to that. There is some notion of having a dual existence, if you will. And let me say this too, Lewis, that in no way, shape or form is any kind of a failure. It's not to say that a person isn't taking a risk, but you approach it realistically. You know, there was a gentleman who approached me some years ago, had an aspiration to act. And he thought, I'll book a few acting jobs again. It's, you know, I'll book a few acting jobs a week and I'll support my family. And I remember saying to him, okay, what metric are you basing your ability to just jump into acting and being able to support your family? And I have to ask that question. I'm not one to try to extinguish anyone's aspirations or dreams, but I have to ask fair questions, because you can end up jumping into this or any other pursuit and being disappointed.
Absolutely.
Because you didn't do your due diligence. So all that to say, man, you know, I keep my day job. There is some element of risk with anything new, but I worked for many years and as an insurance underwriter. Underwriters are trained to gather information to assess risk. So I'm able to lean on that training and that understanding in my pursuit of what it is I want to do. I hope that answers your question.
No, for sure, for sure. And again, I bring up that fear factor because, again, it you make it realistic when you explain it the way you just explained it. For instance, I'm a podcaster, but I'm a full-time podcaster.
I am
on season 3, episode 30, which I'm happy about. You know, this is great. But I take this very serious. And I think, you know, obviously I know that you take acting very serious just because you do have a day job, or you will, you know, you'll have other things that you have to do because you know, you want to take care of your finances. And then that's your bread and butter, but your passion.
Yes.
No, there's another, you spend 8 hours of work. There's another 12 or 14 hours, you know, if you another 20 hours or whatever you want to do, you know, people hustle on and on and on until they get to where they want to get to. And then those that do it, you just never know. Like you mentioned earlier, that there could be that one time where, you know, you hustled long enough and boom, you got that break. So wonderful, wonderful, wonderful explanation, because I think that fear, you know, a lot of people, they just fear getting into it. And really it's how much you want to, you know, want to put into it, especially when you're not working, when you're not doing your day gig.
And I will say, you know, fear can be an emotion that you can leverage positively, right? If it becomes something that paralyzes you and causes you not to move forward at all, that's a problem. But if fear causes you to do more of your due diligence, right? To dot your I's and cross your T's, if it forces you to become more prepared, we were talking about that before, right? Then it can serve you well. Absolutely. I've seen an acronym about fear meaning, the positive meaning is face everything and rise. Wow. I think the negative meaning is, you know, face everything and run. So you can choose, and I may have the second one wrong, but you can choose how you leverage that fear.
Yeah,
does it immobilize you and cause you to do nothing?
Yeah.
Or does it force you to really fine tune things and still move forward?
Yeah.
That to me is the essence of courage. If you have fear and you still move forward.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. And again, I think with you being in front of a camera or being on stage, all those, that fear word and that fear feeling is something that needs to be faced.
Absolutely.
You explained it extremely well.
Thank you.
And I love that. I love that. So let's talk about that because, you know, you said theater, commercial, extra, voiceover, you know, obviously there's some fear in each of them. I mean, obviously when you're in theater, you're just there, you better make it happen. What is your favorite work? If you could do all of them, I mean, you would and you have, but what would you want to do if you could do one of those? Got a hard question.
Well, I'm going to answer this in what sounds like a very nebulous way. I want to operate in a space that brings me as close to my spiritual and natural essence as possible. So if that's theater work, which I thoroughly enjoy, if it's voiceover work, which I'm planning to do more of this year by faith. Thankfully, I don't do much extra work anymore. I paid my dues, man.
Yeah.
I used to travel from the Lehigh Valley to do background work, and it was very valuable years ago. But thankfully, I'm in a position where I audition for principal work, you know, work where you have lines. So I rarely do any extra background work nowadays. But I don't know if it's possible to pick a favorite because I think when it comes to, and I'm blessed to work as a print model as well. When it comes to voiceover, when it comes to TV film, when it comes to commercials, there's something about each one of those that speaks to my essence. So if it speaks to my essence, and if it brings me a real sense of fulfillment, it's difficult to choose one that's a favorite. I do enjoy live theater. There's nothing like that. And that has been wonderful training for me.
Yeah.
So if I gotta pick one, Lewis, I would lean on the theater because it's such this instant sort of gratification, instant interaction with your audience, and it's live in the moment. You have to be, you know, your antennas have to be up. Yeah. There's no time to we're gonna do it again. You know, go have a water, come back. Nah, you're in your element, in your moment. So if I had to choose one, theater would probably be it.
Yeah, and I would assume that, you know, folks getting into acting, that probably would be a great way to get in and really just, even if you're working behind the scenes or just you know, being in the presence of that environment, learning that that's just really, really powerful stuff, you know, theater work. So awesome. So ups and downs, anything come to mind in acting, ups and downs, anything that you would think maybe you got a role you thought you were going to get or you didn't get it, any ups and downs?
I tend to take things like that in stride. You know, I'm sure there have been instances where I've auditioned for something that I would like to get and didn't get it. But I tend to take those things in stride. I will tell you a quick story, though.
Yeah, let's do it.
I remember living in the Valley, man. I was telling a story to a buddy of mine just the other day, as a matter of fact. Brian Pinella, who you may know, he lived in the Valley as well. He's here in New York pursuing acting as well. We had coffee one day last week, right? So quick story. I had done like my first background gig in New York. This was maybe 2011. I was living in the Valley. Excited, right? And then the casting company that hired background actors actually reached out to me. They called me or emailed me and said, look, we think you have a nice look for this show or this scene. Why don't you put on your Sunday best, come out to Brooklyn, you know, and we'll make a decision. So that's what I do. I was living in Bethlehem at the time. I drive out to Brooklyn, Sunday best, Lewis.
Yes, yes.
Soon. And I'm in this office waiting for someone to see me. And this guy is going down the aisle, just speaking to people. And I didn't know he was making assessments of them.
Yeah.
So he's like, boom, boom, boom. He stops in front of me. Not what we're looking for. Boom, boom. I'm like, yo, whoa, 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 whoa.
What a moment.
Yo. Can I just drive out here from Brooklyn for this guy to look at me for a millisecond and tell me you're not what we're looking for?
Man, jeez.
So after I picked my face up off the floor,
bang.
I went to the front of the office. I had to sign something to say I was there.
Yeah.
I get my $17 check a week or two later for my troubles.
Yeah.
Now, that would not happen today.
Yeah.
But that's something that modestly could have easily deterred a person and say, yo, I'm washing my hands with this. I'm not, but that was, it was part of my journey.
Yeah.
You know, so ups and downs can include things like that. It can include not getting a role. It can include having financial challenges.
Yeah.
But I tend to be a pretty myopic kind of thinker. And when I lock in on something, I don't really pay attention to what's going on to the left or right of me to some degree.
Yeah.
And I focus in on the task at hand. So again, much like the question you posed before about difficulty, to me, that's relative.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's some ups and downs. You just have to anticipate if you're going to do this.
Yeah.
And if you walk into it with an attitude of anticipation or expectation, I think that can sort of dull the moment, if you will, when it happens, and still equip you with the ability to move forward in spite of that.
Yeah.
You know, but it is a journey, and dealing with rejection, dealing with uncertainty is not for everybody, but it's part of the deal, man.
Yeah. And again, that's why it's important for, you know, anyone who wants to get into acting or even behind the scenes, or you know, just in the whole world of theater or acting or movies, yeah, or commercials or filmmaking, you know, this stuff's gonna happen, and you just gotta be able to roll with the punches, you know, like yeah. I always say, you know, in life you gotta roll with the punches. It's like anything else. Yeah. But amazing stuff. So let's a couple more things to cover. So I saw you were on Comedy Central. Let us know a couple of the most memorable moments. Comedy Central to me is pretty amazing, but
right.
Tell us a little bit about that, and then some HBO. You know, what was all that like?
Well, the Comedy Central gig, there's a show called Awkwafina is Nora from Queens, right? And it's going into its third season. I was blessed to book a role last year for season three. Season three hasn't started yet. So it should be out sometime this year. I had a funny scene that I won't comment on because I want to maintain the element of surprise when it does air.
For sure.
But that's the name of the show. I filmed it, I think, back in September, following an audition. So it was an opportunity to do some comedy, which was funny. It was very electric. I got some great feedback from regular cast members the day that I was on the set. So that episode should air sometime later this year. And then the HBO thing was just magical, Lewis, because when I auditioned for the role of a barber for a promo for a show that stars sports journalist Bamani Jones, who lives here in Harlem. I actually ran into him. He lives not far from me.
Oh, that's amazing.
I ran into him after we worked together last year. So they were looking for an old school Harlem barber.
Oh, that's great.
And I just went for it.
Yeah.
And I was blessed to get cast. So I appeared in the promo for his show that appeared on HBO. So I think the promo ran for 13 weeks. It was for season one of his show. So that was my HBO experience.
Nice.
So both of those were fun, man.
That's amazing, man. When I saw that, you know, because obviously I follow your feed. So if you know Roy Shuler, by all means, follow his feed. He's going to let you know when he's booked, you know, it's just amazing. I just love to see those posts, man, when you start sharing them, because I'm like, yes, keep going, keep doing it.
Thank you, man.
And I love just the growth of everything. And it's just always good to see, good people that you know, continue the journey, you know, and it's just beautiful to see. So awesome stuff. Any advice? Somebody wants to get into acting. Any advice you would give to them?
This is a business. Mm. Learn the business. Learn how to act. Mm. Take your training seriously. There's so much, wow. There's so much allure to this.
Oh, yeah.
That sometimes people get fooled by that, right? It's a business. And it's so important to approach it as a business and to commit yourself to learning this business and how to act. Mm-hmm. And to operate, you talked about entrepreneurship, to operate as, and there's a term called actorpreneur, right? Mm-hmm. To operate as your own entity, right?
Awesome.
learn how to act.
Yeah.
Learn that this is a business. Learn how to build relationships. Mm-hmm. Learn how to get yourself work. And know your why. Know your why. Why are you pursuing this? Are you pursuing this just because you just want to, hey, did you see me? Okay, that can be fine. It may not be too self-sustaining, but whatever your reason is. Mm-hmm. But again, learn that this is a business. Learn what casting directors do. Learn what agents do. Learn what managers do. Learn what agents and managers look for in someone they're going to represent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Learn what it's like to be on a set.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what a director does, what a first AD, assistant director does, what a PA does. The term PA, production assistant, thank you, what they do. Learn, you know, get on a set. Contact your local university to see if they have directing students, if they're directing short films, you know, how you can get into a short film. But learn that this is a business. And this is not to... This is not to minimize the passion or to extinguish anyone's flame, mm-hmm. but approach this as the business that it is, and look to enjoy yourself and have fun doing it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely a profession, man.
You know, yeah,
you have to be a professional, you know. And like I said, when I walked into that scene, when we were shooting that scene, I was interacting with my sister, who was wasn't my real sister, but she was my sister, and then my daughter was playing my daughter.
Oh, okay.
We're shooting a scene inside the house, and I, you know, at that moment I said, wow, you know, this is so professional. Just when you get there, you see the lights, you see the camera, you see everything, the sound guy. I mean, it's just, you know, they're taking it very, very professional.
And
as an actor, like you said, you know, you just got to take it serious, man. You got to take it real serious. So amazing stuff. You know, this is stuff that young folks that aspire to be actors or get into theater, they need to hear it. You know, they need to hear it. And coming from you, that's important. Now, I always think about, you know, Denzel Washington, a lot of these, you know, these feature film actors, and you can see that they took it serious, that they were hustling every day. And even till this moment, you could see it in their acting. You could see the professionalism. You can see the passion, the way that they get into those roles. And maybe that's something you can touch on. So you got a role, you know, you're playing the mayor of Allentown. You know, can you tell us a little bit how do you get into that? How do you get into that moment, that role?
Well, there are a few ways. You know, you look at how politicians operate. Whether it was the former mayor of Allentown, you know, I know he's not with us now as far as in society, the beloved Ed Pawlowski.
Yeah.
You know, you look at examples, and then you approach it in the moment. Okay. Mm-hmm. What are you saying and why? You know, who are you before? You know, what's your purpose for being there? You know, what are you saying? What are you doing? What are you communicating? There's a phrase from a very well-known acting guru. His name is Sanford Meisner. There's a technique called the Meisner technique, but he's one of his most powerful quotes is, you know, acting is behaving truthfully under imaginary circumstances. So how do you convey the truth in this imaginary circumstance of being in this press conference?
That's powerful, man. That's powerful.
You know, so to me, that's my approach. You know, what are you saying and why? Where are you? And you live in that moment.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful for the wonderful theater experiences I had when I was in the Valley, because those experiences still fuel me as an actor today, and as far as the importance of remaining in the moment. And I bring that to auditions, and also bring it to when I'm on a set in a commercial or theater or, you know, TV or film. So
wonderful.
You know, that's what you tap into. Wonderful. How do I portray this in a way that's as truthful as possible?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how folks get into those roles, and then you see them in interviews, and they speak like us, you know, just regular people, because they're regular people, but they get into, you know, you get into these roles. I see your commercials, I'm like, man, that's Roy. That's my boy Roy.
I got to tell you this, and I hope we don't go long as a result. No. I was blessed, man. When I played Tom Robinson in a local production of To Kill a Mockingbird back in 2014, we had 9 shows at Pennsylvania Playhouse, May of 2014 through June. And it was one of the most magical experiences of my life, man, personally and professionally. But I say that to say this: Tom Robinson was a Black man who was accused of raping this white woman, and everyone knew he didn't do it. I tapped into an experience, Lewis, that I had as a teenager. I was still living in Harlem. I was going to St. John's University. I was working my job at New York Hospital, where my parents work. They're both with the Lord, very influential in my life as well.
God bless.
And I was talking on a phone to my girlfriend at the time, and I was behind Julia Richmond High School. And unfortunately, this was an area, Lewis, that was known for having guys who looked like me who sold drugs. Here it is, I am. I'm a college junior, St. John's University, got my college jacket on, just came from work, talking on a payphone that these drug dealers who look like me used to use. And there's a point to this.
Yeah.
And a white officer came over to me and he said, "If I catch you using this phone again, I'm going to arrest you."
Oh, wow.
I couldn't make out what he was saying because he was talking to my friend who passed away. His name was Al Dreers. He was wondering, while Al was standing in the corner, Al pointed and said, "I'm waiting for my friend who's on the phone." So the officer comes over to me. "If I catch you using this phone again, I'm going to use you. I'm going to arrest you." Mm. I'm trying to explain to my girlfriend what's happening.
Yeah,
I guess I wasn't moving quickly enough. Yeah. So he comes over, and now he's batting his baton.
Oh my gosh.
I say that to say this: I tapped into that experience of being a Black man who was accused of doing something that I didn't do, to bring a sense of frustration,
realness,
and a sense of fear to the Tom Robinson role.
Man, amazing.
And that happened to me in December of 85.
Wow.
So I played this role 29 years later.
Wow.
So all that to say, man, you were asking about how to get into certain roles and how to play, you know, the mayor. We have the power of being able to tap into real life experiences and bringing them into the moment. So we're actually living that thing right then and there.
Yeah. So it's almost like side by side, you know.
Yeah. So that made that a very, very powerful experience, because when I was playing Tom Robinson, I was playing the 20-year-old me.
Yeah, you were Roy Shuler.
That had to deal with this racist cop who thought, solely because I was a Black man on using a phone at 68th Street and 2nd Avenue, that I had to be a drug dealer.
Yeah. Man, that's powerful, man. That's powerful. Yeah. So you got to tap into moments that really you don't even want to tap into. But to bring that realness and to tell that story, a powerful story through acting.
And this is
what people need to hear, man. If you want to become an actor, you got to be able to do those type of things. And that's difficult. I'm sorry you went through that, you know, racial profiling, all that stuff. there's no place for that in this world. And I'm sorry you went through that, man. But thank you for sharing that. That's powerful. So I see we're gonna just turn real quick, and we got two more questions. But I see something. There's two things that I know that I remember about you. One is pies.
What are the pies? It was cheesecakes, man.
Oh man, cheesesteaks. Yeah, I love the cheesesteaks. Cheesesteaks are phenomenal. They look amazing. Right. And then the other one is your workouts. You know, I'm a person who's big on health, big on working out. Tell us a little bit about cheesesteaks, and then a little bit about, you know, why you share your workouts and how important it is.
Okay. Well, very quickly, the cheesecake business was something that God spoke into existence, man. Yeah. I've been baking cheesecakes since 98, 99, never with the idea of it becoming a business. And then when I was a member of Shiloh, I started sharing them at singles events, and people were really liking them and stuff. And one day in January 2012, God spoke to me and said, why don't you try test marketing these cheesecakes?
Yeah.
And there was a different voice, because people had been asking for a while. And I was like, come on, man, this is your idea. I'm not doing that. But when God spoke, I put it on Facebook the next day, got my first order, and it gave birth to a business that I was blessed to run for about 5 years, from about January 2012 until the summertime of 2017, when we, and I say we because it was God and I in business, we were actually operating out of an incubator called Common Space in downtown Easton. Nice. That came to an end because my car broke down, couldn't get back and forth. But that's how that came to be. It was something that I was doing for free out of a love for entertaining that gave birth to a business. One of the reasons I share the workouts, man, I was blessed to learn the benefits of circuit training when I worked for this company that treated me foul, that I spoke about 45 minutes ago. There was a brother who's still a good friend of mine, although I've not seen him in years. Love you, brother. Chuck Howard is his name. He was the trainer at the gym for this company that I worked for. And I learned so much during the 5 years that I was under his tutelage, if you will. And I learned the benefits of circuit training. And there's still things I do today. So I've learned, man, how to get a nice workout in 6-7 minutes, man. I did it this morning.
Great.
25 push-ups, 50 crunches, 25 more push-ups, 50 crunches, 25 more push-ups, 50 crunches. And I'm doing this in about 6 minutes. Like aerobic calisthenics.
Yeah.
I share it to inspire people and to let people know, listen, we all get 1,440 minutes a day.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Can you set aside 10 of them to exercise?
Yeah.
You don't always have to go to a gym. Now, I watch you too, brother. I see you doing the cycling indoors. You got the thing that you put your bike on, right?
I got two of them.
So you don't have to get to a trail to ride your bike.
Yeah. Well, it's cold. It was cold. It was nice the last couple of days, but it's free.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, yeah. I went out yesterday, and I went out. I went out and did the Central Park Loop on. A week from tomorrow, Lewis, God willing, I'm going to register for the Fire Borough bike tour.
Beautiful, bro.
First Sunday in May 7th. I'm looking forward to doing that. But I share it, man, just to inspire and let folks know what's possible.
In a
relatively short amount of time.
Yeah.
Well, and it really just boils down to the discipline. And again, going back to knowing your why.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What's the benefit of me carving out 10 minutes in the morning or 10 minutes, whatever, to knock out some push-ups, do some jumping jacks, you know, do some crunches, whatever. You do that consistently, man, you'll see results. So I'm 57 and a half now. I'll be 58 in May 28th. So I just share to let folks know what's possible, man.
Yeah, no, and I keep sharing, man. We love it. We love to see it. Trust me.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
That's the thing we have in common as well. I love to share my workouts because there's somebody out there that is watching and they're on the cusp of like, you know what? Now it's time for me to get out there and get healthy and do all those things. So, plus, you know, I just love sharing. I'm a person who loves sharing, love connecting, love sharing. Hence, Socially Connected 360. I love connecting and love sharing. All right, great stuff. Last question.
Sure.
I ask this to all my guests. It's one of the most important questions to me because at 19, I struggled Barely made it out of high school. I was the kid from the inner city who just it was 1 second away of just walking out of that high school at 19, barely make it through. Knowing everything you know now, there's a 19-year-old Roy Shuler. You can talk to him right now. Everything you know, what piece of advice or some advice that you would give at that time?
Good question. I would probably say you don't have to have it all figured out. Be afraid. You know, it's okay to have some fear or be afraid, but move forward. I was always a bit of an old soul, Lewis. I was always kind of like mature for my age, just kind of like an older dude in my head than I was chronologically. So I was a bit different, but I would still say you don't have to have it all figured out. Surround yourself with people who you can learn something from, who are going to hold you accountable, who are going to push you in love, in faith, and have certain expectations of you. And, you know, don't be afraid to break away from the masses. Don't be afraid to go it alone. Everyone may not support it. Everyone may not understand it, but don't be afraid of that. And, you know, explore and embrace who and what you are by faith at your essence, and strive to exist there, to live there as often as you possibly can. Now, it doesn't mean you have to do this in a silo. You don't have to do this exclusive of other people. But, you know, take some time to get to know who and what you are. And pursue that in faith. Pursue that boldly. Pursue that without apologies.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's a 19-year-old out there that needed to hear that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, my son is going to be 21 tomorrow. So, there's conversations that he and I have been having, especially during the past few years where he's been in college and he's coming into, you know, being the humbly, you know, awesome young man that he's stepping into. So, you know, learn, you know, get some mentors, learn, you know, solicit people who can teach you something, in a constructive way. Who have your best interest at heart,
Absolutely. Wonderful stuff. Wonderful stuff. And again, like we said, if you want to get into acting, you want to get into, theater and things like that, surround yourself, get yourself in that world, whatever that may be. Even if you don't know if it's going to just be acting, you could find a career behind the scenes that you never even thought could be the most passionate career you ever had,
absolutely.
Lighting, sound, camera work, producers, directors. I mean, editing, the folks mm-hmm. that the all the work that's being put into it. I mean, it's amazing. This is why I asked this question, because at 19 and even at a younger age or even older, somebody needed to hear that. You don't need to have it all together right now, and just keep going. And all the advice that you just said, thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
Great podcast. So what's next for Roy? What's next, man? What's next, brother?
Well, brother, I thank you for asking. I'm very excited, man. I was blessed to film a commercial for Colonial Penn. This was back in February or March of 2021. And it ran its full course. It was scheduled to end in November, and it got extended for another 21 months.
You're going to be the face of Colonial Penn.
I don't know about Jonathan. Jonathan Lawson has that role.
Ah, okay.
But it's nice to be affiliated with them. So
that's great.
In the midst of that, I auditioned for another Colonial Penn commercial, was blessed to book that, and I filmed it back in December, maybe November. So that should be hitting the air any day now. So you'll see me in two Colonial Penn commercials on the air at the same time, which I'm very, 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 very grateful for that. I just booked the role last month in an episode of Law and Order SVU.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
Going to be filming that probably within the next couple of weeks. I think the fitting is scheduled for tentatively scheduled for next Monday. Wonderful. So I'll be filming that scene.
That's cool,
one day in the next couple of weeks. So those are two things on the immediate horizon.
Law and Order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Law and Order. My acting coach, I got to give a shout out. One of my acting coaches, James Ciccone. James Ciccone. He said that makes me official. as a New York City actor.
Yeah.
And having booked Law and Order, so I'm looking forward to being on that set one day soon.
Wonderful. Real quick before we end the podcast. So folks know, SAG, no SAG, or?
No, I am a member. I'm a member of SAG. I was blessed to join SAG-AFTRA back in January of 2020. So I'm coming up on my third year anniversary. Yeah.
Wonderful. So folks know, right? Screen Actors Guild. Can you explain that just real quick?
Sure. It's basically a professional union for performers. So I think it's about 180,000 members strong. They make sure that actors, performers are compensated fairly and are treated right when they're on the set. And that's a quick definition. They're a very powerful performance union that I'm blessed to be a part of.
Great. And difficult to get, or is that something that comes with time and you just, you know, you work your way in?
Well, there are a couple of ways you can get in. You can get in by getting vouchers, and there are a number of different ways. But you can get a voucher. If you have a principal role in which you have lines, you can get a voucher that makes you eligible.
Okay.
If you're doing background work, you get three vouchers and you're eligible to join. There is a pretty hefty initiation fee. I think it's about $3,000 or $3,100.
Oh, wow.
You can pay for it in installments.
Yeah.
But that can avail, that can make bigger jobs available. And it's really a personal call as to whether a person should join Screen Actors Guild, but I'm very thankful that I was in a position to join almost 3 years ago.
No, that's phenomenal. And it's good to know, because a lot of folks, you know, when you're auditioning, and maybe you could explain it real quick or answer the question. Sometimes they're just looking for, they might be looking for SAG actors.
Yeah.
That actors,
very true. Very true. And sometimes, I mean, sometimes they are. Sometimes there can be somebody who's non-union, who's not SAG, who is outstanding.
Yeah.
And they may give that person what's called a waiver. Where you know, they'll hire them as a non-SAG, as a non-SAG member, and then that person at some point may have to join, you know, after they have X amount of jobs. But most often than not, when you see principal work on TV and film, you know, most often than not, those are SAG members, SAG-AFTRA members.
Great to know. Great to know. These are the little things that I think are extremely important. Last thing, where can folks find you if they want to talk to you, they want to book you, or they want to, you know, talk further, maybe get some advice? Where can they find you?
Sure. My website is Roy Schuller, RoySHuller.com. I'm also very active on, I have a professional Facebook page that I set up about almost 7 years ago. You know, it's Roy Schuller Actor. You can Google it and find me. But those are the spaces in which I operate most often, where folks can find me.
Wonderful. We're going to share the links, folks, when we premiere this show. Thank you so much, Roy, for coming on the podcast, man. Episode 1 of season 3. It's a blessing to have you on. Tons and tons of wonderful information. Thank you for having us on.
Well, thank you for the invitation, man. I do appreciate it, man. Keep up the great work, man.
I appreciate you, folks. Just like I said, we're on iHeartRadio, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Podcasts, we're on YouTube, Facebook. I mean, you name it, we're going to share everywhere, even TikTok. We're going to share on TikTok. I mean, it's just growing. We're connecting with everybody. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Episode 30, in the house. Like I always say, stay connected.